محمد حسني مبارك
President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down. President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down as President of Egypt, and he has decided that the higher council of the armed forces will lead the nation.
After 2 weeks of protest, after Tunisia's president fled his country in the face of demonstrations, after yesterday's defiant speech indicating he would not step down, President Hosni Mubarak has resigned. Vice President Omar Sleiman making the announcement on state TV in Egypt just after 6 p.m. Cairo time, around 11 East Coast time. We reached Mahmoud Salem, the blogger known as Sand Monkey with over a million followers, right after that announcement in Tahrir Square. We asked him what was going on.
Celebration!
How's it taking? You know, what are you seeing? What are people doing? What are they saying?
People all over the place are hugging each other, waving their flags, and having a grand time.
Mahmoud, are they at all worried? The military is going to be, you know, taking over. Are they at all worried?
We're not worried.
Why?
Because if the military wanted to rule us or kill us, they would have done this and saved Mubarak. We're not going to worry about this.
If the military had wanted to kill you, they would have. What are you feeling right now? You've been blogging. You say you're not a leader of this, but people...
I'm so happy right now. I'm just happy and I want to jump up and down in the street.
How do you think your life is going to change, Mahmoud?
I have no idea, but I'm optimistic. All of us are.
The blogger Sand Monkey, his real name, Mahmoud Salem. It's been hard to get through to Cairo. There's still such a wall of sound coming from the city. But we also reached Wael Ghanem, the Google executive who helped launch the protest through Facebook. He was detained for 12 days and became the reluctant face of the movement. He only spoke a few words before we lost the line, but those words were powerful.
All I can say is welcome back, Egypt. They told us you died, but, you know, hundreds of thousands of us went to the streets at the beginning to search for you. And in 20 days, we became 20 million until we found you. Welcome back, Egypt.
Welcome back, Egypt. They told us you died, but hundreds of thousands of us went to the streets at the beginning to search for you. And in 20 days, we became 20 million till we found you. Welcome back, Egypt. On the line now, Jeffrey Fleischman of the Los Angeles Times, also in Cairo, above Tahrir Square. Jeffrey, what do you see?
Well, people in the square are going crazy. It's pandemonium. There's car horns and the flags waving, and there's people weeping, and there's people walking around in disbelief. And because, you know, it was like a whipsaw from last night to today, the emotions that people have gone through, thinking that yesterday on the 17th day of the protest they were going to have to endure days longer, but they still turned out. And it just became too much of a burden for the military as the country was faced with great economic problems and other things that they felt they had to step in and nudge them aside. We still don't know what this means as far as the military's role and what exactly will unfold in coming hours and days. But for right now, it's mostly one of jubilation.
Do we know why this happened? We're reading reports in the AP and elsewhere that the sense is there was such fierce reaction and anger to Mubarak's defiant speech yesterday saying that he wasn't stepping down, that it was the military that felt they had no choice but to push him.
Some things are still emerging, but what appears is that the speech last night was muddled and confusing and wasn't written with the precision that it needed to be. But apparently last night the Egyptian authorities wanted to convey the fact that Mubarak had in fact stepped aside and given power to Suleiman, but that wasn't, it didn't come across that way in the rambling speech, and which went on in many directions. So they wanted to correct that today, and the military began releasing statements in the morning to that effect, saying it was going to guarantee constitutional reforms and other things. So as the day progressed, it seemed like the military was taking more control. We still don't know what it means to Vice President Omar Suleiman and what exactly the government structure is going to look like.
Right, because again, the announcement said that Hosni Mubarak has resigned and handed control to the military. Do we know what control? How much control?
No, we don't know. Yeah. Those things will come out in coming hours. But right now, we don't know the control at all. Just that the military is in control.
Right. Well, meanwhile, we're hearing the jubilation, the extraordinary celebration. But what about the supporters of Mubarak? What happens to them? Where are they? Is there, you know, are they afraid, or, you know, are they being seen at all?
We haven't seen them, but we haven't seen any reaction like we did a week ago from, you know, Mubarak supporters. supporters who sort of terrorized the square for a while, but Tahrir Square. But right now we don't know. I mean, maybe people in this kind of police state, after these many years, people who may have been loyal to the regime quickly change. I mean, we saw that happen in other countries, especially in Eastern Europe, when people were forced to be part of a communist party, and then when a system fell, they forgot all about it. So we still, you know, that may be some of the sentiment here, but we don't know yet.
Right. And do you get the sense that, you know, members of this old guard, whatever they are, members of parliament, people who work for state TV, are feeling a seismic shift?
Oh, definitely. I mean, but again, they don't know what this means and what level, how much democracy will be unfolding in days to come with the military in charge. Will they allow a transitional government that they'll oversee before elections in September? There's just so many unknowns. So while it's an immediate breath of sort of jubilation, there's still a lot of uncertainty.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Okay. All right. Take care. Bye.
Jeffrey Fleischman, Cairo bureau chief of the LA Times in Cairo. Let's bring in Rami Khoury, editor-at-large of the Daily Star newspaper in Lebanon. But as listeners know, he's been visiting with us for the past couple of weeks, as he is a visiting fellow at Tufts University here in the Boston area. So, Rami, how terrific to have you right here in the studio with us as this unfolds. What are you thinking?
Oh, hallelujah. I mean, this is an extraordinarily important and joyous moment, not just for the people of Egypt, but I think for the Arabs, for everybody in the Middle East, Iranians, Turks, Israelis. Everybody should be happy to see the most important Arab country pull out of marginalization, pauperization, self-inflicted impotence and mediocrity, and to shift into a new mode of self-assertion and revival of everything that Egypt stood for so many decades. This is a moment of tremendous historical importance.
But as you told us yesterday, it's not really a moment. It's a long slog that's about to start. You're nodding yes. And so a moment of surely of a jubilation. But, you know, questions about, you know, the military taking control. We're not quite sure how much control, but as you and others have explained to us, this is a military that people feel connected with. It has a draft. This is not the dreaded paramilitary police force. But still, what do you think happens now?
Well, we can't predict exactly what's going to happen, but we can identify unbelievably important historic developments in the last 2 or 3 weeks. We're seeing for the first time a self-determinant Arab people, citizens of an Arab country defining what they want to do. We've seen them get rid of the ruler. We've seen a negotiation that has now started between the armed forces, civil society, old parties, and people on the streets, and the private business. All the critical players now are emerging in Egypt and negotiating a new power-sharing arrangement, which is going to go on for some time. We're seeing the military basically play its role as safeguarding the nation, not protecting the great ruler. And this is unbelievably important. The implications of this for the whole region are tremendous. And
Let's step in there. I mean, there have been people who have been following every beat of this and others who haven't. To explain why, we know Mubarak has been ruling for almost 30 years. We know he's had a state of emergency for, I think, 29. We know that there's a huge divide in the country, the very wealthy, and then I think something like 40% of Egyptians live on $2 a day, something like that. So explain why this... moving this man in particular is so important.
It's not so much the man. He is the symbol of a system, of a mechanism of exercising power and ruling, which goes beyond his 30 years of rule. He took over when Sadat was assassinated. This goes back to 1952, when the military coup of Nasser, when the military took over in 52. And ever since then, it's been uninterrupted military rule, the army basically holding, underpinning the ruler. So Nasser, than Sadat, and now Mubarak, uninterrupted, and now Omar Suleiman, another aging general. So,
say his name for us, the new vice president,
Omar Suleiman.
Okay.
Omar Suleiman, which is Solomon, of course. It's an Abrahamic name. And you've got one general after the other. The difference now is that a populist uprising overthrew one aging general, Hosni Mubarak, and forced a negotiated transfer of power. And this is now going to play itself out over months and months and months. It's incredibly important to see. This breaks the breaks the after the Tunisians did it first, and we have to give them credit. Hail Tunis! Mm-hmm. After the Tunisians did this, they broke the Arab police state that's been running the Arab world since, effectively, since the 1970s. In some cases, like Egypt, since the 1950s. So you can't. This is you can't underestimate the importance, the symbolic and the practical implications. This is like Lech Walesa and Solidarity changing Poland into a more democratic system, which 10 years later overthrew the whole Soviet empire.
What do you think the impact will be on the Arab world? We hear Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, praising the protesters in the streets of Cairo because he's trying to compare them to the Islamist revolution in his own country. On the other hand, he's denying Iranians permission to have their own protest on Monday because they, of course, want to have a popular protest. He's trying to depict this as an Islamic revolution and applauding it for that. But we know it's not an Islamist revolution. So what happens in the rest of the region?
Well, I think the first thing you should do is just ignore Ahmadinejad. I mean, people in this country give him way too much importance. The Iranian people is what counts in the long run, and the Arab people have started to assert themselves.
But when they've stood up to him, they've been brutally repressed, Twitter, despite all the mechanisms.
The Iranian regime, which started with a lot of Islamist legitimacy when it overthrew the Shah, has degenerated in the last 30 years into a typical Arab Middle Eastern regime. They're not Arab, they're Iranian, but they've become an autocratic state that rules by force. And the majority of Iranians, I think, are critical of the regime. So I think just forget about Ahmadinejad for the moment and look at what is the implications in the region. The grievances that the people expressed in Egypt are widespread in most of the Arab countries except the rich Gulf states. The nature of rule in most of the Arab countries is almost identical to Egypt with slight variation. Some regimes have more legitimacy, others have less. So the implications of this are enormous. And just as Tunisia's revolt spilled over quickly into Egypt, Egypt's now will, everything that has started in Egypt has resonated in the Arab world, from journalism to cinema to education to Islamist movements to terrorism to every single aspect of life and culture and identity in Egypt has spread to the Arab world, and so will we see this with democratization.
Rami Khoury, editor-at-large of the Daily Star newspaper in Lebanon, but a visiting fellow at the Farah Center at Tufts University, so we're happy to have him in the studio. We're coming up on a break. We'll come back with Rami, but we want to listen to the sounds of Al Jazeera correspondent Ravia Raghez describing the scene outside the presidential palace in Cairo earlier today after Mubarak stepped down.
Simply indescribable, 30 years of rule summed up in a 30-second statement. It's just simply unbelievable. I'm 30 years old, Adrian. I was born the week President Mubarak assumed power. All my years of life, I have known one president, and I can tell you, I have never seen this sentiment on the streets of Egypt, not even when Egypt won for the third time in a row the African Cup of Nations. Nothing like that.
A remarkable, remarkable day. We are watching history unfold right in front of us. We're listening to it. I've been talking to Rami Khoury, editor-at-large of the Daily Star newspaper in Lebanon, here in our studios in Boston because he's a visiting fellow at Tufts University. Rami, hold on one more second there, though, because I want to bring in Peter Nicholas, a White House reporter for the Los Angeles Times. And Peter, tell us what's been going on in Washington, because we were hearing reports last night that there was a battle in the Obama administration between young Turks like Samantha Power and people like Hillary Clinton. The young Turks wanting the White House to push more forcefully for Mubarak to step down. Hillary Clinton saying that there has to be some stability and some semblance of order. What are you hearing? What happened in the run-up to today's announcement?
Well, the White House has been divided, Robin. There is a division between the realists and the idealists in the White House, and it looks like the idealist faction might have the upper hand at this point. We saw some very strong language coming out of the White House last night when it looked like President Mubarak was going to resign and did not. President Obama issued a statement saying this was not a satisfactory conclusion, that Mubarak's statement was muddled and he needed to move more quickly towards democracy. So it seems like the president wanted to align himself with the forces in Tahrir Square, calling for more rapid democratic evolution in Egypt. And my sense is that he's going to be quite pleased with today's events.
Well, and what more can you tell us, though, about, again, in the run-up to this, some of the confusing signals that we got? Yesterday, CIA Director Leon Panetta told Congress there was a strong possibility the Egyptian president was stepping down. Now, we also heard that from bloggers on Tahrir Square. Did Mubarak go off message? Was he supposed to step down last night? And is that what the White House thought he was going to do? Or did the White House not have a good line on what their great ally Mubarak was actually going to do?
Well, the White House was caught flat-footed at the beginning of this crisis. We had Hillary Clinton way back on January 25th on the first day of protest saying that this regime was stable and the Mubarak government was trying to meet the legitimate demands of its people. So it's been a confusing 2.5 weeks for the White House. We've seen mixed messages, and we've seen a White House that has not always had a handle on events, and statements made by the White House have often been overtaken by events. And yesterday was really no exception. We heard what Leon Panetta told the House committee yesterday about having received reports that Mubarak would be stepping down. It turns out he was referring to press reports. He was not referring to intelligence reports.
But, see, that's a little alarming, isn't it, that the CIA is reading from the newspapers?
It does make you wonder. Well, we do have a CIA. We would hope they'd have better information than tweets coming from NBC. But in any case, then we had President Obama talk about, during his visit to Michigan yesterday, talk about a transformation underway in Egypt. And it seemed like the White House had an expectation that we might hear about a resignation yesterday, but it did not happen. We all need to do more reporting on this. We need to find out what happened and why the White House, whether the White House was misled. But I do think that where the White House is now is they feel that their quiet diplomacy and pressure exerted on Hosni Mubarak paid off.
Well, I just want to ask you very briefly, Peter. What happens in the Republican camp? We have people like Glenn Beck still saying that this is the world order unraveling. You were saying the White House was almost on the wrong side of democracy. Right. It would appear. It appears that at least parts of the Republican Party and the right are, it would seem, on the wrong side of democracy.
Well, the Republicans have stepped very carefully on this. We've had Newt Gingrich saying that the White House has acted amateurishly on this. I've spoken to aides to Republican Speaker John Boehner, who said they've been reluctant to criticize Obama. They feel he's handled this pretty well. So it doesn't seem like there's really a coherent and clear and unified Republican message on this crisis and the White House handling of it.
Peter Nicholas, White House reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And Rami Khoury here in the studio with us. I just want to clarify something. You were telling us that what you're seeing here is the throwing over of decades of not just autocratic leadership, but a military-run country, and then a military involved in the change of power. And here we see, it came from the streets, but we're still hearing that the military is going to, the control is being passed from Mubarak to the military. Why are you not worried about that?
I'm not worried because, A, I think the Egyptian military gets the message better than the Egyptian autocratic political rulers who came from the military. B, because I have immense trust in the collective will and values of the Egyptian people. This is a turning point. This is not just another big demonstration. This is a culmination of two generations of indignity and degradation that has now been overthrown. And therefore, it's a whole restructuring of the political and power structure. This is not just a reform, adjusting people, putting one general in place or another. This is redrawing the map of governance in Egypt.
You've told us this is nothing less than the unraveling of the whole post-colonial order.
Absolutely.
In the Arab world. And yet, what do you think happens when people who are making $2 a day, and we just have a few seconds before the break, and we know you have to go, people want you everywhere, but what do you think happens when people realize they're still going to be making $2 a day for a little while? I mean, you told us it's going to take a long time.
Yeah, poverty is not a driver of revolutions. Humiliation and degradation and dehumanization drives revolutions, and this is what we've seen. You can have have a lot of poor people who don't necessarily overthrow the government, but if they feel they have a chance to get out of poverty, to have their rights as citizens met, to have their humanity recognized, they can handle their poverty and then hopefully get out of it. I think you're going to see an extraordinary mechanism whereby all aspects, all groups in Egyptian society now come together to figure out how do we tap this potential. You have 80 million people in Egypt, and so many of them are educated. They have tremendous power.
Rami Khoury of the Daily Star in Lebanon, but also a visiting fellow at Tufts University, as we listen to the sounds from Cairo. Rami, thank you, as always.
Thank you. Hail Egypt.